following program is brought to you in living color on
DailyGazette.com or wherever you get your podcast.
The Daily Gazette Company presents the Parting Shots podcast. Now, here's your host, Daily Gazette sports editor, Ken Schott.
Thank you, Scott Giese, and welcome to the Halloween edition of the Parting Shots podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe today. Thanks for joining me from Frightsville, USA. I mean Schenectady, New York, and the Parting Shots podcast studio. It's another great show for you. Nothing scary. This lots of treats, no tricks whatsoever on this edition of the podcast. We'll have our usual Tuesday Union Hockey men's and women's media availability sound. The men coming off a pair of victories over RPI last weekend, and the women off to a 2-0 start in ECAC hockey play after beating Harvard and Dartmouth last weekend at Mess Rink. The men are off this weekend, but the women head to Cornell and Colgate, number 9 team in the country in Cornell, and number 6 Colgate. Those games will be Friday and Saturday, so a big test coming up for the women Garnet Chargers. We'll speak on the men's side with Colin Ferguson, Caden Villegas, and Ben Muethlisberger. And on the women's side, head coach Tony Macy, Carrie Ann Engelbert, who scored all three goals in the win over Harvard and earned ECAC Hockey Rookie of the Week, Maren Friday and Sophie Matsoukas. And a couple of my Gazette colleagues will join me. Mike McAdam will preview this weekend's Breeders' Cup, which gets underway Friday at Del Mar. And we'll talk a little bit about Siena basketball. He's having a feature on Jerry McNamara, getting ready for the start of the season. The Saints open Monday against Brown at MVP Arena. And then Adam Schindler will be talking area college football. And basically, the seasons are over for UAlbany and Union football after losses over the weekend. There's still some games to play, but for all intents and purposes, no postseason for either team this year. So we'll talk about that as well. So coming up, it's Union hockey, men and women. We'll talk about the games from last weekend and look ahead to this weekend. You're listening to the Parting Shots podcast. Hey, pro football fans, it's time again to match wits with other pro football fans and win a prize by playing the Daily Gazette's You Pick 'em Football Contest. To play, go to dailygazetteprofootball.upickem.net and make your picks before the first game kicks off each week. If you have the most weekly points, you win a $100 Hannaford gift card. Play the Daily Gazette's You Pick 'em Football Contest today.
Want to get all the latest news from the Daily Gazette on your phone or tablet? We have an app for that. The Daily Gazette app allows you to read all the newspaper stories and columns from our dedicated team of journalists. The app is free. You can download the app from the Apple or Google App Stores.
Hi, this is Union College head football coach John Drock. You're listening to the Parting Shots podcast with the Daily Gazette sports editor Ken Schott.
Welcome back to the podcast, and now it's time to talk Union men's and women's hockey. Both teams had successful weekends last weekend. We'll start with the men. They opened the ECAC hockey play against their area rival RPI and took care of business, winning 6-3 last Friday at Houston Fieldhouse, going 4-for-9 on the power play, firing 23 shots on goal. Ben Muethlisberger and Colby MacArthur each had a pair of power play goals, and they really could have had a lot more. A couple of shots hit the post. Colin Ferguson and Carter Corpy also scored for Union. And then Saturday night at Mesa Rink, RPI had a 3-2 lead in the third period, but the Union got a power play, their first of the game, and Josh Nixon scored and tied it up. And just a little bit later, Muethlisberger got the game-winning goal, and Kyle Chauvet made an incredible save on John Beaton, one-timer in the slot. Beaton was left alone, some defensive blown coverage there with 3.2 seconds left, and Union won the Capital Skates Trophy for the first time since 2017. The Garnet Chargers are off this weekend, a little bit of a bye. They'll be back in action next weekend for a pair of home games against Alaska Fairbanks. That should be an interesting matchup. And then the following week, they'll resume ECAC hockey play against St. Lawrence and Clarkson before getting set for their first trimester exam break. On Tuesday, we had our usual, as we do every Tuesday, media availability at the table on Tuesday for the men were Colin Ferguson, Kate Villegas, and Ben Muethlisberger.
You guys are 6-1, and you have a first weekend bye here. Cullen, is it a good time to have a bye with the way you guys are rolling?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's nice to get a little bit of a break. We can look at the positives from the last seven games, take what we want to keep moving forward, and take this time off and be ready to use everything in the next couple games against Alaska.
Get it.
Yeah, I mean, it's good to have a weekend off, everyone get healthy again. Some guys are a little banged up, so we'll have everyone good to go for the next weekend coming up. And two big games against Alaska. We won both, but we'll take them one game at a time. We're happy with the start. We just got to keep it going.
Ben, what about taking some time off here?
Yeah, it's good. I think everyone kind of hit the reset button and kind of move forward from here and just really focus in on those two against Alaska here.
Yeah, just how much does it help to be able to have that good feeling going into a bye where not only do you win two games, but against your rival, getting a trophy and just be able to kind of ride that high for a little while?
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, the morale in the locker room's high. You just don't want to be content with anything. You want to stay hungry and practice every single day. We're setting out to be a different team here and make something happen. So I think we just need to stay hungry throughout this break and this time off, which I think the boys are doing a good job of.
Caden, what do you think? I mean, talk about Josh. He wants to spend some time later this week working on situational plays like 4-3, 6-5, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, how important is it to work on that while you're on off this week?
Yeah, obviously our 5-on-5 play, we've worked on it a lot, and this extra time just kind of gives us that ability to work on things that might not happen so often and we don't focus on when we have short weeks. But now we can kind of dive into them and hit on them a little deeper than we usually would. So going forward, we don't have to touch on them as much, and we can already know what's going on, so it's good to get prepared for things like that.
Yeah, Ben, the power play got off to a slow start, but now it's rolling here, and that play a role over the weekend against RPI. How good is it to get the power play going? And was there any sense of concern that you guys were not scoring on the power play early on?
Yeah, it's big. Obviously, it's the 10 guys on both units and just staying hungry and not giving up and talking to Howard, like we just had to stay hungry and just want it. So we knew it would come, and we just stayed disciplined, stayed the course, and good things happen.
Ben, another rookie of the week for you, and just you look at the points leaderboard for all the players in the NCAA, your name's towards the top. Just what has it meant for you to come in and have the kind of early impact that you've had on this team?
Yeah, it's meant a lot. It's a credit to the guys in the room, and obviously it's a 28 man team and job. So credit kind of goes all the way around the room and all the way from the staff all the way down to Kyle and Nett. So it means a lot, and we got a long ways to go.
And for you to have the kind of impact that you did in a rivalry series, game-winning goals in a rivalry series for anyone has got to be fun, especially in your freshman years. What was that feeling like to contribute in that way in those big moments?
Yeah, it's good. It's a good environment. Playing here, we had a good crowd, and the boys really came through, and obviously Shavs with a big save at the end to hold on and secure the win. Just kind of taking that momentum into next weekend against Alaska.
Ben, when we talk to you after games, you're always deflecting credit the media wants to give you for your effort, making it about the team. How would you describe your personality? I mean, are you a shy person, like to avoid the limelight?
I'm definitely not a shy person, but this isn't tennis. It's not a one-on-one game. It's a team sport, and that's why we love it. We're all brothers, and it's a family here. So one guy can't make a difference. It's got to be a collective group effort.
Caden, how would you describe Ben?
I love Ben. He's come in and made a huge impact for our team. He's been successful in how he's playing the game. He's not cheating it at all. It's coming because he's being responsible in every area. We're getting everything we want out of him, so he'll keep it up, and we know it.
I mean, he's a guy that is not afraid to shoot the puck. Watching that goal he scored Friday night, the first goal that basically destroyed the goalpost there at RPI, is the way it sounded. And got back. is it good to have a guy like Ben who's not afraid to shoot the puck?
Oh yeah, no, it's huge to have a guy like that. That it doesn't matter where he is in the zone, he's always a threat to score. And even if he does shoot, like, he's always creating an opportunity for someone else to get the rebound and bury it. And as the season goes on, I'm sure people will see him and be like, "Whoa, he's a real danger out there." So he'll start opening up other guys, and he's got the passing ability too. So he'll find other guys, and everyone benefits off his play.
Yeah, Colin, you talk about Ben a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, he's an unbelievable player, but I think at the end of the day, he's a better guy, and that's why he's finding the success that he has right now. And we love watching him shoot the puck, so I hope he just keeps it rolling. And yeah, he's a good teammate. I think that's the most important thing.
Yeah, Ben, I want to talk about that pass, the Pro Cup there on Saturday night. What did you see on that one, and how important is it to be unselfish?
Yeah, it was a big play by Hanley, a little switch with him in Pro Cup, and John's finished hard at the net and stopped right on the crease, and he got rewarded for going to the dirty areas, and I was fortunate enough to find a stick, and it was a big goal.
I think it was Colby McArthur after the Friday's game when we talked about that first power play goal on RPI. He said he looked at one of the other guys that he's going to play in the NHL one day. Is that, do you think you're NHL material down the road? Maybe not right now, but you know, 2-3 years down the road.
I'm a freshman in college, so it's gonna only time will tell, and long road ahead.
How did you choose Union?
Coaching staff is first and foremost. They caught my eye, and you know, just from the first conversation I had with them, that was a big piece of why I chose here. And then I came and visited and really felt myself at home, and you know, just wanted to be a part of this this culture here.
Was New Hampshire ever an option in your home state there, or Dartmouth?
No, I mean, Union's a good spot. I'm happy to be here.
Now let's talk about the Union College women's team. They were entered last weekend on a 5-game losing streak, but they took care of business against Harvard and Dartmouth as they open up ECAC hockey play like the men. Both games were at Messer Inc. Union winning last Friday 3-0. Carrie-Anne Engelbert got all the goals in that game, and was her first career hat trick, a freshman, and she was named ECAC Hockey Rookie of the Week on Tuesday. And then Saturday against Dartmouth came from behind, 1-0 deficit, scored 2 goals in the third period to take a 2-1 victory. So Union off to a 2-0 start in ECAC hockey play. Now a real test begins this weekend. They'll go to number 6 Cornell Friday at 3:00, and then number 9 Colgate in Hamilton, New York on Saturday also at 3:00. So big test to see where this team is at. And next weekend, an even bigger test, they go to Clarkson and St. Lawrence. We'll talk more about that next week. On Tuesday, at their media availability, it was the head coach Tony Macy, Carrie-Anne Engelbert, Maren Friday, and Sophie Matsoukas.
Well, Tony, start off the conference play with 2 wins over the weekend. Now comes the big test. Colgate and Cornell's on the schedule here. How big of a test is this to keep the ECAC ball rolling?
Well, every game we play in the ECAC is big. You know, it's the strongest conference, I think, in the country, top to bottom. So, you know, for us, it's just a good opportunity to go in, play some experienced teams that are, you know, up in the standings nationally. To kind of give us an idea of where we are at. So I think last weekend was a good step, but this weekend will be another time for us to try and step up.
Martin?
Yeah, I think we want to approach every game with the same mentality and go into it pushing the pace and sticking to our systems and staying detail-oriented. So I think we just want to continue building on this last success and go into Colgate and Cornell with some confidence and ready to meet their pace.
Yeah, I think it's a lot of the same of what they said, just kind of keep pushing forward. Colgate and Cornell are two really strong teams, so kind of seeing what we can do against them and really showing them who we are.
Yeah, Sophie?
I think they said it all. We play a ranked opponent every single weekend, so I don't think that should make a difference in how we play. I think it will be important to come out strong and do the same every single weekend.
How important is it to go into these buildings and not be intimidated? Because, I mean, these teams have had some great success over the years, and you guys are trying to get there.
I think every team is different. I think that we've seen a little bit of success in the past and we've jumped some bridges every time. So I think that with our new team and everything, I think just coming out strong and playing them would be good.
Yeah, what about that, Tony? You've gone there as a, you know, assistant at Clarkson. What's the key to get victories in these buildings?
Well, the big thing is we got to, you know, play a good road game. You know, I think that that's the big thing. We can't get caught up in their style of play. We have to be able to, you know, control what we control. We got to be okay with trying to weather some storms at times, and then take advantages when we can.
How much confidence and kind of momentum does it give after, especially, you know, losing a couple in a row to get those two conference wins under your belt, so you're going there, you know, 2-0 rather than 1-1 road to?
Yeah, I mean, anytime you can get a win, I think is important, right? Whether it's 1 or 2 on a weekend, just to give you some confidence to kind of show you like, hey, what we've been doing's been working. So I think the big thing is, you know, we were able to do that last weekend. We're able to build off of it. Still a lot to work on, but a lot of good things came out of last weekend that we can now move into this upcoming series.
Yeah, same question for you guys. Just how much confidence does that give you guys to, you know, going in there that, you know, you guys have had some success?
Yeah, I think it definitely does build confidence. I think we're very proud of how we played and how we approached those games, but I think we want to have the same approach to every game, in which we don't want to be changing our play style based on the teams that we're playing. We want to be confident in how we're playing and the pace that we're playing at. And so I think, yes, we want to build on what we did, but we also don't want to kind of like go into the building intimidated because of how strong the teams have been.
Carrie-Anne, you had an incredible game last Friday against Harvard, scoring all the goals. You get named ECAC Hockey Rookie of the Week on Tuesday. How do you feel about that?
I mean, it's definitely very exciting. I'm, you know, new to the league, and starting off like this, it's definitely, you know, it's been exciting, but it is a team effort. I think my team really set me up for success on Friday. Everyone played amazing, and pucks were going to the net. So I think a lot of it really comes down to the team and being able to build off some, you know, great players.
I mean, were you shocked that all your seemed like all your shots were going in?
Yeah, you know what? I got to thank my stick for that.
Tony, your thoughts about Carrie-Anne?
Yeah, she started out really hot here for us. You know, I think the big thing with that is, you know, we talk about trying to get to the tough areas, and Carrie-Anne's been fortunate enough to get to those tough areas, and we've been able to get pucks down that way. You know, I don't think she has maybe 1 or 2 goals outside of, you know, the 1 foot line in the crease there. So, you know, getting those tough areas is something that she's done a really good job of, and she's been rewarded.
Thank you guys so much.
Up next, we're going to head to the horse racing track with Mike McAdam at the track with Mac. We'll talk Breeders' Cup starting on Friday, and of course, it continues on the Saturday. So Mike previews that for us here on the Parting Shots podcast. Stay tuned.
College hockey's elite teams, coaches, and student athletes. ECAC Hockey, 12 programs competing at the highest level. A league where champions are born and world-class professionals are trained. Where history is abundant and a commitment to the cutting edge is unrivaled. The best facilities, the fiercest competition. ECAC Hockey, there's no experience like it.
The Daily Gazette has some great subscription deals happening. Sign up today at www.dailygazette.com. And as always, when credibility matters, trust the Daily Gazette.
Hi, this is Daily Gazette reporter Shenandoah Breer. You're listening to the Parting Shots podcast with Daily Gazette sports editor Ken Schott.
Welcome back to the podcast. Horse racing's biggest time of the year is coming up this weekend. It's the Breeders' Cup, and Gazette's horse racing writer, Mike McAdam, here with us at the track with Mac segment. And Mac, here we go.
Yeah, you can tell it's Breeders' Cup because I got piles of paper with little orange, like teeny post-it notes, you know, for bookmarks and blue and red and black pen all over this list that I was compiling of certain things.
I hope you clean up afterwards here in the studio.
I have to, because I need this stuff still. No paper will be left behind. Yeah.
So the 41st, I mean, 41 Breeders' Cup, that's amazing. Yep. It's going to be held at Del Mar in California on Friday and Saturday. And the main event, the BC Classic, has drawn a wide open full field of 14. But before we get to that, the darling of the Saratoga Summer Meet, Thorpedo Anna, will take on older fillies and mares in the BC Distaff as a 4-5 favorite and a highly anticipated edition of the race.
Yeah, and it would have been a lot more highly anticipated if we didn't have two of the better older fillies and mares drop out of it, Adair Manor and Idiomatic, who won this last year and won the championship. We're really salivating over the matchup between Thorpedo Anna and Idiomatic with, you know, maybe Adair Manor. They both were retired with very, very minor issues that would not allow them to be ready for the Breeders' Cup. So they're fine. In the meantime, Thorpedo Anna takes over as the 45 favorite out of the 14 Breeders' Cup races. She's the shortest price of any of them, despite the fact that she's a three-year-old running against older fillies and mares for the first time. Her record this year has been absolutely exemplary. She's won four straight grade ones restricted to three-year-olds, and then, of course, she was second to Fierceness running against males in the Travers at Saratoga, which was one of the greatest Travers I've ever seen. I've been covering this stuff since 1987, and she got past him at the wire, so she did almost get there and beat him, which would have just been historic proportions. She's coming off a win by a neck in the Cotillion on Pennsylvania Derby Day at Parks, which was kind of a funky situation. You look at the margin on paper, but if you look at the race, which I did a couple weeks ago prior to watching her work up at Saratoga the second for the last time, she was boxed in all the way. And then Brian Hernandez was able to find a little bit of a gap to get her out to some free running room, and she won by a very short margin. But you can tell that tactically her opponents realized, of course, that she's the one to beat and kind of played it that way. And I'm thinking, you know, we might see kind of the same thing in the Breeders' Cup Distaff. She's breaking from the number two post, which means Hernandez is going to have to find some forward position but not get in a cage like he was last time, which nearly cost her a grade one race down at Parks. So it'll be kind of interesting to see what the early tactics look like. The race itself, two interesting horses in there at Raging Sea, trained by Chad Brown, who's just bringing a loaded armada of live horses to the Breeders' Cup this year, as usual. And she is riding a three-race winning streak. This is Raging Sea. After having, I got all these stacks of paper, and it's like craziness here. She's coming off three straight wins, two close ones in the Beldame at Aqueduct and the Personal Ensign, and Shuvi both at Saratoga. And then the other one that's really interesting is a Japanese-based horse named Awesome Result, who's undefeated from seven career starts and is going to be kind of a buzz horse coming into this, also representing a large contingent of Japanese horses. But Thorpedo Anna, we've been tracking her. She's been on the radar since really May. She's been in Saratoga at trainer Kenny McPeak's barn across Fifth Avenue in Saratoga Springs, right across the street from the Oklahoma training track, since shortly after she won the Kentucky Oaks, and literally didn't fly to California until this past Sunday after having breezed up at Saratoga for the final time. I happened to be up there for the breeze before that, and it's all systems go. And that work, I made a point of going to that one because that was the really, really serious, aggressive one to get her fit for this race. And then the one last Saturday was just sort of a maintenance breeze to just keep her where she's at. The quote from Kenny McPeak was, and her nickname has been the Grizzly. And out of that workout, he said, they better bring some bears because I'm bringing a grizzly. So she's locked and loaded. Can't wait to watch her run. She wins this thing. She's a lock for Horse of the Year as far as I'm concerned. She's already got the three-year-old Philly Division Eclipse Award nailed down. So she's going to be drawing a ton of attention this weekend.
Well, as usual, Mike, the Saratoga meet served as a natural pipeline to the Breeders' Cup, whether certain stakes were designated as BC qualifying races or not. Of the 179 entries, over a third of them ran at least once at the Spa meet. Who are some of the more prominent ones?
Yeah, I mean, this is pretty typical. I mean, they do, the Breeders' Cup every year puts out a roster of races throughout the calendar year where it's an automatic qualifier. The Breeders' Cup in Saratoga naturally hosts a bunch of those, which means, you know, you get a free trip to the Breeders' Cup. But because Saratoga has a ton of grade ones that aren't designated, a lot of those races are sending horses to the Breeders' Cup as well. And that's pretty typical pipeline or path to this event goes through Saratoga. So we got 61 of 179 horses entered over the 14 races that raced at Saratoga this year, including 7 of the 14 in the Breeders' Cup Classic, which is kind of cool. There were 12 two-year-olds that are entered in Future Stars Friday at Del Mar this week, who broke their maiden at Saratoga this year, which is, again, typical because that's kind of the time of year and the venue for the juvenile horses to start jumping into stakes races and breaking their maiden. You know, the maiden races up there are worth $100,000. It's not even a stakes purse. So it pretty typically you're going to see that pipeline every year. Some of the ones that ran at Saratoga that I'm interested in seeing Friday, again, I mentioned the Future Stars Friday, where the 5 Breeders' Cup races are restricted to 2-year-olds. We have the Chad Brown-trained Chancer McPatrick. We have the Todd Pletcher-trained Ferocious. And we have Jonathan's Way running in the juvenile, which, you know, theoretically is supposed to be a pipeline to, you know, Kentucky Derby Trail the following year when they turn 3. Chancer McPatrick won the hopeful on closing day. And my friend Seth Merrill from Capital OTB TV have a sort of a tradition on closing day, Labor Day at Saratoga, where we go downtown, and it's kind of ghost town. There's a couple bars are open, and we went to one where the owner of Chancer McPatrick was there, and needless to say, it was not an early night. but he's fired up to get this horse in there. So you got those three that all ran up there. Another interesting one is Menti, who's running in the juvenile turf, and he's interesting because he's a full brother to Fierceness. So Fierceness won the Eclipse Award and won the Breeders' Cup Juvenile last year, and his full brother, same mare, same sire, Menti, he ran at Saratoga this year. On Saturday, 6 of the 9 morning line favorites in the 9 Breeders' Cup races all ran at Saratoga this year, so the quality kind of followed through from August and September and July and into November to get to the Breeders' Cup. 2 of them trained by Chad Brown, Ways and Means, who's in the Filly and Mare Sprint, Domestic Product, who's in the Dirt Mile, and then another interesting Chad Brown horse, our old buddy Carl Spackler, is not the favorite, but he's running in the mile with a really good shot. That's the mile on the turf. And I already mentioned the Domestic Product in the Dirt Mile. Another horse in that race who ran at Saratoga did not fare very well is Seize the Gray, the Preakness winner, who's coming off 2 losses in the Belmont and Jim Dandy, where he just didn't look very good, but then he kind of rallied and made a nice performance in winning the Pennsylvania Derby. So they're not going to try to run him at the long mile and a quarter distance. They're going to run him at the Dirt Mile on Saturday. So Seize the Gray's in there, too. We'll be watching him.
Yeah. Well, besides the Classic and the Distaff, the other 12 BC races offer some interesting matchups and stars. Which of these are you most interested in seeing?
Cogburn. that's the easiest answer of all of them. There's 67 international horses entered out of the 179 that I already mentioned. That's a record. And they're from 8 countries and 5 continents, including one from South Africa. So throw Africa in there. You know, a ton of good live Japanese horses. Cogburn is the only person on my list of having run at Saratoga this year who's entered in a Breeders' Cup race who did not actually run at the Saratoga meet itself. He ran in the Jaipur during the Belmont Stakes Racing Festival this year, which, of course, was held at Saratoga while they rebuild Belmont Park. And all he did was break a North American record for 5.5 furlongs on the turf in the Jaipur back in June, which some are wondering if it's also a world record. He's 7-5 favorite in the turf sprint, so clearly we want to see what he does. Unfortunately, the race that he was supposed to run at during the Saratoga summer meet got rained off and rescheduled for a week later, and they decided, well, you know, we'll just train up to the Breeders' Cup. And then as far as other non classic and Distaff races or horses. The dirt mile is usually a bananas race every year. And this, you can go in a lot of different directions with this one this year. You got Saudi Crown in there. You got Muth, who was kind of on the Derby trail for Bob Baffert earlier this year. You got Skippy Longstocking, just kind of like a really interesting collection of horses trying to run at a mile. And it usually happens every year because one of the things is there's horses that are sprinters on the dirt during the year and other horses that are root horses running at a mile and an eighth or a mile and a quarter, and they get to the time of the Breeders' Cup and they're like, ah, they kind of hedge their bets a little bit and they wind up in the dirt mile instead and try to stretch out if you're a sprinter, cut back if you're, you know, like a longer distance horse. And so you get this kind of weird hodgepodge of really good horses with different kinds of resumes. So dirt mile's always fun to watch. Looking forward to that again.
Yeah. As you mentioned at the top, the Classic is wide open and has an intriguing morning line favorite, the UK-based three-year-old City of Troy, who will be racing on a dirt track for the first time. What are some of your preliminary thoughts on how the Classic will shake out?
Well, specifically referring to City of Troy, he's run seven times. He's only lost once. He's a really, really good horse. He's three. He has run against older horses a couple of his last two times out, but he's never run on conventional dirt that you see on the North American tracks. He's run on turf all seven of his starts. So it's a big question mark for him. He's also flying from the UK, so it's a long trip. That whole Aidan O'Brien trained contingent of horses, which is really a sight you got to see, because he had them out this morning. They got here on Sunday. They had to sit in quarantine for 48 hours, and then they were out on the track for the first time this morning. And he just sends all of his horses, which in this case is probably a dozen or so, maybe 10, at the same time, and they just parade out in a straight line, and he's in that group, City of Troy. It's really kind of a cool thing to see. It's just kind of one of his training routines that he does every day when they go out onto the track. City of Troy, so he's kind of a mysterious X factor question mark, even though he's the 5-2 favorite. His record is stellar. But again, I think the turf to dirt question mark is not an unreasonable one. So there's, you know, he's 5-2. I already said that pretty wide open Breeders' Cup Classic. You know, besides him, I think the three-year-olds have a really good shot this year, because in North America, you know, the older male dirt division really has just been muddled. Nobody's taken the bull by the horns. No one's really stepped up from the older horses. So here we go into the Breeders' Cup Classic, and the top three on the morning line are three-year-olds, and City of Troy is one of them. Fierceness is another one, and Sierra Leone is the third one. Other interesting horses include Whitney Winner, Arthur's Ride. You got Forever Young, who finished second in the Breeders' Cup Classic last year. Highland Falls won the Jockey Club Gold Cup at Saratoga. I'm sorry, Derma Sotogaki, he's the other Japanese horse. He's the one that was second in the Breeders' Cup Classic last year. Forever Young was the horse that was kind of banging heads with Sierra Leone in the Kentucky Derby this year and wound up ran a winning race but didn't actually win it, just because of all the shenanigans between him and Sierra Leone, where they kind of canceled each other out and allowed Mystic Dan to get up the rail and win the Kentucky Derby by a short margin. No, the last one I'm going to mention is really interesting horse, Next, who won the Birdstone for the second year in a row at Saratoga this year. And as soon as he did, his trainer, Butch Cowens, was unsaddling him in the winner's circle, and some fans were yelling, "Classic, Classic, run him in the Classic." And he laughed and said, "Charlestown or Breeders' Cup?" Which was a great response. But the reason for them to be chanting that is because this horse, Next, who's just a wonder to behold, he won the Birdstone by over 22 lengths this summer. But he has not raced in a race shorter than a mile and 3/8 in since forever. And he's just a marathon beast, but he never runs in the Breeders' Cup because they don't have a race that at a distance that accommodates him. And the trainer and the owner, and he's a wonderful horse and a real big fan favorite and everything, but you just never see him at the Breeders' Cup until this year. He was actually cross-entered in the turf at Del Mar, which is a mile and a half, which is his right in his wheelhouse distance-wise, but he doesn't run on the turf. So I think they kind of hedged and said, all right, let's try a mile and a quarter. Unfortunately, he drew the 14 post. I don't know how much that's going to affect him, but you can't miss him. He's this, like, white horse, and I don't know where he's going to be in the race, but I know there are a lot of fans out there that were happy to see him in there because they've been salivating to get him in a Breeders' Cup race, and there just isn't a good distance for him. He kills it at a mile and three quarters, but there's no dirt race longer than a mile and a quarter. So let's see what next does.
Yeah, I was wondering if the city of Troy, New York, would be getting behind the city of Troy the horse.
I don't know. The horse, he was bred in Kentucky, but his whole career, he's run in Ireland once and England six times, so they haven't really had a chance to get behind him unless you follow international racing closely. He's never run here before. Maybe they will. We're getting close to the turkey trot, too, so there's a lot of Troy things going on.
Well, before I let you go, Siena men's basketball season starts Monday. They host Brown at MVP Arena. Of course, the beginning of the Jerry McNamara era. You had a story. You have a story in Thursday's Daily Gazette and online at dailygazette.com. What's the sense like over there with Jerry over there now? Is there a sense that this program is going to turn things around after what happened last season?
Of course there is. I mean, first of all, you're not talking about a huge swing that would constitute a turnaround. They were 4-28 last year, and Siena fans were ready to jump ship. Siena really needed to make a move that would at least get the fan base engaged again, and Jerry McNamara, how much better of a name and history can you get than that? I mean, he played for Syracuse during their national championship year that went through Albany. He's just a great legendary player for them, played for Jim Boeheim. He was an assistant for Boeheim and Adrian Autry, his successor. And so there's a lot to be interested in for Siena basketball fans this year. The story I have will include a lot of input from Boeheim himself, who was in town a few weeks ago they had kind of a panel discussion going on in Albany. Hopefully that reminds me, there should be a live stream archive of that that I need to go back and just look at the panel discussion and the Q&A. I remember at the sneak preview, I asked Jerry McNamara, you know, the news had broken that day that Boeheim was going to be there, and I said, he told me, yeah, he'll be great because he's got a lot of stories. And I said, does he have any stories about you that maybe you don't want to hear? And he goes, yeah, I'm sure he does. So I'll have to go back to the archive and see what Boeheim said. But the enthusiasm and excitement that has generated, Boeheim gave me some great stuff about going all the way back to when he was recruiting Jerry McNamara out of Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. So there will be some good stuff in there. But I asked both of them, as much as the enthusiasm is through the roof for the Siena fan base, how long is the honeymoon going to be for him, like, you know, wins or losses is his bottom line. Yeah. And they both said the same thing independently, one game. So they're so used to being in the winning and losing mentality that they're not really – you know, they're going to let the fans be as enthusiastic as they want to be, but they don't assume anything when it comes to how demanding they'll be for the season to really turn around, which after 4-28, like I said, I mean, 500 would be a huge turnaround. But and maybe the fans will be satisfied with that, but I know McNamara won't. But that's what they're going to love about him. Yeah. So.
Well, it's going to be an interesting season following the Saints, and Mac, we'll appreciate a few minutes talking horse racing, and good luck on your bets if you bet.
Thanks for having me, everybody. And everybody, hit some home runs out there. I think I say that every year, and then, you know, I got my tail between my legs after. It's really hard because there's no bums in here, and it's hard to pick a winner. I mean, flat out. I mean, it sounds stupid, but... the fields are so deep and everybody's talented and there for a reason because they're good. So, but there's some nuggets in there. So get digging, people.
All right. That's Mike McAdam. Coming up, my Gazette colleague Adam Schindler will talk about the lost weekend for Union football and UAlbany football. You're listening to the Parting Shots podcast.
If you really want to know what's going on in your community, you have to read the Daily Gazette. We don't take a side. We're right down the middle, and we're going to get to the truth. Our reporters and photographers are out in the field bringing you updates every minute with trust, accuracy, and integrity. From the first page to the last page, independent, probing journalism. We're finding out what's going on in the community where nobody else is covering. It's who we are. It's what we do.
Hey, everybody, this is Don Barnes from 38 Special, and you're always rocking into the night when you're listening to the Parting Shots podcast with Daily Gazette sports editor Ken Schott. Hold on loosely, Ken. Just don't ever let go.
Welcome back to the podcast. Before we get to Adam Schindler and area college football, Mike McAdam, the interview I taped with him was on Tuesday. The original plan was to have the Jerry McNamara story online Wednesday, but it's a little change of plans. It's going to be online Thursday at dailygazette.com and in the print edition on Friday. So I wanted to clarify a little bit there. Now Adam Schindler joins us to talk area college football. Adam? Basically, let's face it, the seasons are over for both UAlbany and Union. And we still have, obviously, games to play, but just not looking good.
Yeah, it's the situation where you know, last year both these teams had pretty historic seasons. They were both in the playoffs. This year, I mean, barring anything extremely, extremely weird, Union would need essentially a six-way tie in the Liberty League to break their way.
Other teams that not have no play their games anymore.
Yeah, and UAlbany could still, you know, theoretically make some things happen in the last half of the season, have a winning season, but there's not much beyond that, and there's still some tough ones on the schedule.
Let's start with Union, 27-0 loss against Hobart. Just an ugly game for the Garnet Chargers. 41 total yards rushing. Patch Flanagan had 21 of those. And passing-wise, 201 yards, but just couldn't score.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it last week. This is what Hobart's defense has done to pretty much everyone they've played the whole season. I think they've allowed, you know, through seven games, I think they've allowed two teams to score more than 10 points. And Union was, you know, this is 27-0. Union was in this game. It was 13-0 at the start of the fourth quarter. And then Union, a couple turnovers down the stretch. And Hobart was able to turn them into a couple of late touchdowns. So, yeah, this was a competitive game. It was just Union's offense never got in gear. And in a lot of their losses this year, that's been the problem. And when you have a team that's, you know, got 2,000-yard rushers from a year ago, I would say that really between Michael Fiore and Jonathan Anderson, neither one has really gotten going and had the big games they had last year. What you'd have to say is that the issues probably do start up front. This is a team that made a lot of changes on their offensive line. They've had some young guys step in, and then coupling that with the fact that they haven't been able to establish a downfield passing game. So even though the passing game's gotten better the last couple of weeks, this was probably, other than the two interceptions, this was one of Patch Flanagan's more efficient, high-volume passing games of the year. But when you're not stretching the field, and I mean, the longest pass play that Union has in this game is 20 yards. When you're not stretching the field, teams are just going to load the box against you. They're going to put 7-8 guys up front every play. They're not really worried about teams going over the top against them. So you couple a passing game that isn't generating big plays with an offensive line that's still kind of gelling together and struggling a little bit. And that's the recipe for 41 total rushing yards and no points.
Yeah, and meanwhile, the Union defense had no answer in stopping running back E.J. Taylor of Hobart. 26 carries, 140 yards, two touchdowns on a 29-yard run in the game, averaged 5.4 yards a game. And then passing-wise, Johnny Columbi, 16-25, 166 yards, one touchdown, and yeah, there you go.
Yeah, E.J. Taylor, the Hobart running back, right now is top running back in the Liberty League, and yeah, this is what Hobart does to teams, and they are a tough matchup every year. This had been you know, something I wrote in my preview of the game last week, that this had been a series where five of the last seven games had been decided by a touchdown or less, and they're usually knockdown, dragout games, and unfortunately, this one was Hobart knocking Union down and dragging them out of Liberty League contention.
You know, it doesn't get any easier for a Union. They have Ithaca coming in Saturday at 12 noon at Franklin Bailey Field.
Yeah, now this is not the same Ithaca team that won the Liberty League last year. They are not quite as good as that Ithaca team that was really one of the better Division III teams in the country. But of all this, of all the Liberty League rivals that Union's had, Ithaca's been their hardest hurdle. They are the class of the Liberty League pretty much on a yearly basis. Union, other than 2019 when Union went undefeated during the regular season, won the Liberty League, Union has not beaten, other than that 2019 win, Union has not beaten Ithaca since 2009.
What do they have to do to maybe do this on Saturday?
I mean, if you're going to say it, I mean, here's the thing. Union's 2-0 at home, they're 0-5 on the road. They've played their best football at home. If you're going to get this game, and now they've got 2 weeks at home for the first time all year with this game and then Rochester the next week. This is a winnable football game. You know, Ithaca has not been the team that ran over teams like they did last year. But it's really simple. They have to generate a consistent run game and force teams to respect the pass. If they can be, you know, put themselves in situations where they're in second and three instead of second and eight or nine, then all of a sudden the playbook becomes a lot more open and John Drock can do a lot more with what he wants to do with Patch Flanagan.
Speaking of John Drock, I mean, I don't think he made the schedule up for this season. So what does he look forward to next year? Maybe getting a more favorable schedule, have a little more home games and not have three of the first four on the road.
Yeah, I mean, they'll naturally schedule some more home games. It's going to be a difficult schedule next year. The Liberty League adds another football only member in Hilbert, who is, to be completely fair, another cupcake game. Not to besmirch Hilbert, but this is a team that has been that is only in its third or fourth year of fielding a football program. Union went there last year and basically rolled over and had the starters out by the middle of the second quarter in that game. They probably could have put up 80 or 90 points in that game if they had really, really wanted to. And then the Liberty League and Empire 8 are also starting a bit of a scheduling arrangement, so there are going to be some tough games. I believe SUNY Cortland, who is the defending D3 national champion, may end up on Union schedule next year.
Wow.
You know, Springfield is a pretty common opponent. But yes, I would expect they will play more home games. I would expect they will not have two home games before November next year.
Well, let's move over to UAlbany. Another Coastal Athletic Association lost 28-14 to Delaware. And this is another tough one. And really just... Yeah, what can you say?
Yeah, I mean, this was a game that kind of reminded you of 2 years ago in that UAlbany got hit by a big play in the running game, and that was kind of it. First play from scrimmage, Marcus Yarns from Delaware goes 69 yards for a touchdown. He scores another touchdown 5 minutes later. It's 14-0, and even though UAlbany's competitive through a lot of this game, they just could not get back to even.
Yeah, Yarns then finished up with 127 yards and the one touchdown. 13 carries. I mean, UAlbany had 134 as a team rushing compared to Yarris. So, I mean, UAlbany's rushing game didn't really get going.
Yeah, this was they averaged 3.5 yards a carry. That does include four sacks. So really, you look at it, they're really running the ball, they're averaging about 4.5 yards a carry. But this is a team that clearly Griffin Waddell is not what he was last year. He only had 3 carries in this game. It's been the grad student Faisal Aiden and Jojo Uga, who's been a pretty impressive freshman who you'll think will get a lot more looks throughout the season. But they haven't established, for the most part, a consistent run game. And then their pass game has been boom or bust. This is another game where Miles Burkett was 50% completion. You know, they're able to generate some big plays. You know, Seven McGee caught a 41-yard pass, and they're able to get downfield a little bit. They've got some guys who can make things happen in the, you know, the receiver screen game, but this is just a team that has not found consistency all season. And, you know, when you can't get off the field on defense, and they've struggled through that a lot of the year, then, you know, if you can't get off the field on defense and you are boom or bust on offense, that leads to a lot of long drive, 3 and out, another long drive, and a very tired defense that then wears down late in the game.
And you got New Hampshire coming in on Saturday. Is that another tough one?
I mean, every CAA game is a tough game. And New Hampshire, remember, New Hampshire is the one team that beat UAlbany in the CAA last year. This is not a New Hampshire team. You know, it's a New Hampshire team that looked like it was going to be pretty highly ranked early on in the season. They're 4-4. They're 2-2 in conference. They are... coming off a loss to Villanova where they only scored 6 points. They lost to Rhode Island the week before that. So they're coming into Casey Stadium, you know, not playing their best football, but this is a rivalry that's produced a lot of wacky games over the years, produced what is still one of the wackiest endings I've ever seen during the COVID season, where UAlbany somehow escaped a game when their punter got called for an illegal kick with about a minute left that let New Hampshire take over with inside the 10-yard line. UAlbany makes a goal line stand in the only game they win in that four-game spring 2021 season. But again, for UAlbany at this point, with a young team, this is about, you know, stacking games together. You know, New Hampshire, they have their rivalry game against Stony Brook coming up after that on the road. They go to Rhode Island, who's been a very, very good team. They're a ranked team. And then Hampton at home to close the season. So there's things they can do. You know, if you're UAlbany, you hope you find some rhythm. You run the table. You win. You have a seven win season. You're 5-3 in the CAA. And you're not making the playoffs, but that's a respectable season in a very tough conference.
Yeah. Well, as we always like to do, close out talking about our Philadelphia Eagles and a very complete game Sunday against the Bengals.
Yeah, that was a game that, even more than the Giants game, that's the game that I've been waiting to see from this team. You know, the turnover luck wasn't going to be as bad as it was through those first six games. So to finally get some giveaway, some takeaways, a balanced offense, you protect your quarterback, he doesn't turn the ball over. This is the kind of football this team was playing 2 years ago when they were as good as anybody in the NFL.
Yeah. And you got Jacksonville coming in the link on Sunday. Was originally
Green's back out again.
Yeah, originally a Sunday night game, but moved out for Indianapolis and Minnesota, which I'm kind of happy for that, to the 4 or 5 start. And Andrew Catalan's on the call, so I actually got to text him and say, be gentle to our Eagles. So, Adam, appreciate it. We'll do this again next week.
No problem.
That's Adam Schindler. We'll wrap things up with the winners and the latest You Pick 'em football and auto racing contest in just a moment. You're listening to the Parting Shots Podcast.
Hi, I'm Rick Marshall from the Daily Gazette's Martial Arts Podcast. In each episode, I interview artists from around the region, from musicians and comedians to dancers, sculptors, even video game designers. After you finish the latest episode of the Parting Shots Podcast, I hope you'll give martial arts a try.
Explore the benefits of subscribing to the Daily Gazette, like our convenient e-edition, app, personalized newsletters, and unique reader rewards when you join. Start your membership today. Offers redeemable at www.dailygazette.com.
Hi, this is Andrew Catalan of CBS Sports and formerly of News Channel 13 WNYT. You're listening to the Parting Shots Podcast with Daily Gazette sports editor Ken Schott.
Back to wrap up the podcast. The Week 8 winner in the Daily Gazette's You Pick 'em Football Contest was Mary Moore of Schenectady with a 14-2 record. Mary wins a $100 Hannaford gift card. Congratulations, Mary. I wonder if her middle name is Mary. It's Tyler. Mary Tyler Moore. That would be good. The VIP winner was, by way of a tiebreaker, for the second straight week, Jim DeMarco of Morris Fort with a 12-4 record. I was also 12-4, while my Gazette colleague Adam Schindler was 11-5. I am 81-42. Adam is 80-43. I'll announce the You Pick 'em Football Contest winner's name, and that winner's name will appear in Thursday's Daily Gazette. To play, go to dailygazette.com and click on the You Pick 'em Football banner. The Week 34 winner in the Daily Gazette's auto racing contest was Jim Newman of Rotterdam with 75 points. Very impressive, Jim. Jim wins a $50 gift card. Congratulations, Jim. The VIP winner was Dwayne Leach of All Seasons Equipment with 35 points. I'll announce the auto racing contest winner's name, and that winner's name will appear in Saturday's Daily Gazette. To play, go to dailygazette.com and click on the auto racing contest banner. Just because COVID-19 mandates are easing, that does not mean you should relax. Be vigilant. If you have not gotten vaccinated or received a booster shot, please do so. Do it for yourself, do it for your family, and do it for your friends. Don't forget to download the Daily Gazette app and sign up for our e-edition so you never miss a headline. Subscribe today at www.dailygazette.com. We have a lot of great specials going on. When credibility matters, trust the Daily Gazette. That wraps up another edition of the Parting Shots podcast. I want to thank members of the Union College men's and women's hockey teams, Mike McAdam and Adam Schinder, for being part of the show. If you have questions or comments about the podcast, email them to me at shots, that's S-C-H-O-T-T, at dailygazette.com. Follow me on X and Threads at Slapshots. The views expressed on the Parting Shots podcast are not necessarily those of the Daily Gazette Company. The Parting Shots podcast is a production of the Daily Gazette Company. I'm Daily Gazette sports editor Ken Schatz. Thanks for listening, and I'll catch you next time. From the Parting Shots podcast studio in Schenectady, New York, good day, good sports, and go vote on Tuesday.